An advisory for listeners, our next conversation deals with violence against women. The disappearance and homicide of Gabby Petito has seen a massive wave of attention on social media and in the press. The story has dominated headlines and TV news coverage. According to one count from the Washington Post, her name was mentioned more than 800 times on cable news over a seven-day stretch this month. But media watchers have also said the story is shining a light on the disparity between media attention paid to missing white women and people, especially women of color. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you noticed this disparity yourself? What do you think is behind it? Do you think the media needs to do a better job covering crimes against communities of color? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Molly Jongfast is a contributing editor to The Daily Beast. Her recent piece is titled What Gabby Petito's Case Says About Cops and Us. Molly, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Now, this is, of course, a tragic story, and I don't think anybody's saying it shouldn't be covered, but you write, and others have said, it shows a disparity in media attention when there's a white woman going missing versus people of color. Can you talk about your thoughts on that a little?
Well, it's an interesting, we do find ourselves in a situation where it's almost misogynistic that the women who get the most coverage are very attractive white women. And I think that it's a sort of strange phenomenon. And if you look through history, Gwen Ifill was the person who talked about it, who started this idea of missing white woman syndrome, that they're, the press sort of gets attached to a story of a very attractive white woman. And you can think of their names throughout decades. Cassandra Levy, there are, different women throughout the ages who have become these sort of figures. And if you think about it, it really is approximately three women every day are murdered by intimate partners. So the idea that it's just one that becomes the story is really kind of unfair.
Coming up, we'll talk to a co-chair of a task force on missing and murdered Indigenous women in Wisconsin. You looked at how many Indigenous people went missing in the area where Gabby Petito had gone missing. Can you talk about what you found?
Yeah, there was other reporting that said that it was about 700 Indigenous women over about 8 years had gone missing in that same area where Gabby Petito had gone missing. I actually read other statistics that say the number is much higher, and the reporting on that is not totally clear, which is why the Department of the Interior is starting this Indigenous Woman Tracking Project to really find out what the real numbers are.
What do you think drives this outsized attention, this disparity in attention from the media?
If you look at Gabby Petito, she's very beautiful. She has sort of a lot of photos of her on social media. People felt a little bit invested because they sort of knew her from social media. But she also is the sort of the stereotypical beautiful blonde haired woman. So I think that there's a sort of kind of natural draw to that. And ultimately it's upsetting. And also there are hundreds of other cases every day that are not getting even a fraction of the kind of attention. So it ends up being very dispiriting.
I've seen with sensationalized stories in the past where sometimes a news publisher or editor might say, well, this is what our audience wants, so we're giving it to them. I can't cite anything that's happened with this particular instance. But what do you think of that idea that the media is maybe just feeding what the public wants here?
I think that isn't actually true. Like if you look at something like Serial, I think that when it comes to cases like this, these kind of murder cases, they tend to be what's covered gets people interested. So it's not quite the same, I think, as, covering, for example, like Britney Spears is very famous. So there's a lot of interest in that story. Whereas this is, these kind of tragic stories are interesting if you cover them. I think they're also tragic and disturbing, and there's a larger issue of like how we cover domestic violence, which I think is very, very important. And, you know, if you see one thing in this story that really, besides the fact that they're not covering all of these other women, these indigenous women, these, you know, women from different cultures, African-American women, Hispanic women who are not going missing. The other thing I think is really should be taken away from this case is that the police really, I mean, we don't know exactly what happened, but it strikes me that the domestic violence stop was a real mistake on the police's part.
We're talking to Molly Jong-Fast, contributing editor of the Daily Beast, looking at the coverage of missing and murdered women and the Gabby Petito case. Got a lot of media attention as compared to when women of color are missing. Many of them don't get much or even any coverage at all in the media. Molly, I was going to ask you about that and the what can we learn about how we treat domestic violence, domestic abuse, both for police and for us in the media?
So all we really know is what we've seen from that traffic stop camera. But what the sort of notes that I've read say that the police thought that she was abusing him, which statistically is very unusual. So for a police to get there strikes me as really problematic. Right? I mean, I think the assumption should always be that the more likely scenario is that the man is abusing the woman, because statistically it's much, 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 much more likely. So, and then they ask him if he's okay. And then they let her, he goes to a hotel and she sleeps, or she goes to a hotel. One of them goes to a hotel and one of them goes to sleep in the car. But it, you know, it is absolutely, I mean, if this was the, you know, they had an opportunity to change the course of things, and that didn't happen. So I think that's a really a good question is, are police really trained to look at domestic violence situations, and can they de-escalate as opposed to just letting people go off?
Getting back to the media coverage side of the story, Molly, there was a lot of coverage of this particular tragic instance. But there's been a lot of media reporting, including your article that made us give you a call, critiquing the media and this disproportionate coverage. Do you think that things might change after this?
I mean, again, this is one of these situations where it's like, if you cover something, it will be covered, right? So the question is, how do we cover missing Indigenous women? How do we cover domestic violence as a larger issue? How do we cover missing women? And I think we have to look at ourselves all the time. I mean, I think the solution to all of this is always to have a newsroom that looks more like America. You know, stories are covered when you have real representation. So that would be my first thought. But I do think like we all have to always look at ourselves and look at our implicit biases and look at the stories that we think are interesting and ask ourselves, are we really being fair to what's going on in America?
Molly, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Molly Jong-Fast, contributing editor for The Daily Beast. She was with us today to talk about her recent piece, What Gabby Petito's Case Says About Cops and Us. Up next, we'll talk to one of the leaders of a state task force looking into the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think there is enough awareness on this issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women? Do you want to see more support to the state's tribal nations to deal with this problem? Is this something that's affected your own life? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk now about a disparity in attention paid to missing white women versus women of color. As part of that conversation, we'll take a closer look now at the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If this is an issue that's affected your own life, that's 800-642-1234. Justine Rufus is co-chair of the Wisconsin Department of Justice Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force. She's rural coordinator for the Wisconsin Coalition Against Sexual Assault and a member of the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Justin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me today.
Can you tell us about how big a problem this is in Wisconsin?
You know, one of the one of the tasks that the task force is really looking at is trying to figure out what that number is. We know that there wouldn't be a need for a task force if this wasn't a real problem in Wisconsin, and we know that it's happening in our backyards. And I often kind of say an example of my community. So I come from a small reservation of less than a population of 500, and in my lifetime, I can name four women that have gone missing from my community. And I think that if other folks live in small towns, that's a very large number. And when we go from reservation to reservation, that's the same kind of things that we're seeing in each of our communities. And so it's very scary that this type of violence is happening against Indigenous communities right in our backyard here in Wisconsin.
Do we have even good enough data to give us a clear understanding of how big a problem this is?
No, that's a huge problem. I think that we're not only facing here in Wisconsin, but nationwide, is the data collection is just not there. We also understand that Indigenous communities don't have direct access to systems. For example, NCIC database, which every other officer might use in order to report a missing person. And so this lack of infrastructure coupled with the lack of the fact that most Indigenous folks live off reservation. It's estimated that 70 to 80% of our population is not actually living on the reservation. It's really hard to keep track of the data. And then misclassification is one of the highest things that we're seeing when it does come to the data on our folks not even being identified as Indigenous or misclassified in the way that the cause of death.
As we heard from our last guest, there is a disproportionate amount of coverage in many cases when a white woman goes missing versus people from other communities. Do you see this yourself, a lack of media attention or awareness of this problem?
And yes, absolutely. This has been a historical issue. I often do a training for new advocates throughout the state when they're getting trained as new advocates. And I used to ask them to raise their hand if they've ever seen on television an Indigenous person that's gone missing. And the few times that I've had the hand raise, it was in another state or it was a child. But it was rare that anyone raised their hand when it came to women and didn't even understand how tremendous of a critical issue this is in Indian country, and how many of us are disappearing without any media attention is quite scary.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that an issue that's clearly not under the radar for you and the communities you're working with, why do you think it's gone so under the radar in general in the media?
You know, I just honestly need to say, I don't know what the answer to that is. I wish that oftentimes I think when it comes to tribes, you know, there's that tribal sovereignty that really separates us from other communities. But we all need to recognize that this is happening here in Wisconsin, and this can no longer be just an Indigenous issue. This has to be a humanitarian issue. We have to care more about what is happening amongst us.
Talking to Justine Rufus, co-chair of the Wisconsin Department of Justice Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force, talking about the scope of the problem of missing and murdered Indigenous women in the state, what is getting in the way of even having good data and information, and possible solutions. And let's start looking at changes you want to see. And first of all, it sounds like there's a communication and coordination issue between different police agencies, the state, tribal, and local. What kind of things are you hoping to see change?
Well, we're recognizing that so nationwide, and this is just an issue in Wisconsin, that we're starting to understand the systems better as we're doing this work. And there is no one set protocol for when folks go missing. And so what Indigenous communities rely heavily on, especially in public law 280 states, which we're in, it is a trust responsibility for the state to help us when someone goes missing. And so it makes it complicated when there's not only one police force involved, but for our cases, there's multiple layers of it could be county, FBI. So we're looking at multiple layers of systems that come to the table, and then trying to figure out who's in the lead on the case and who's taking charge can be very complicated.
As you mentioned, not all of these cases happen on or involve reservations. But when they do, do tribal police departments have the resources, the person power to pursue these investigations as much as they need to be?
No, we do not. Absolutely not. And it's interesting because it's, our search parties are folks that are trained in this, are really volunteers. And they travel all over the state. So we don't have one for each community. It may be somebody coming from a different area, and there are very small volunteer groups of folks that may have retired from fire departments or police, or old ex-police officers that kind of just do this on a very volunteer basis and have very limited resources.
A while back, I talked to former Senator Byron Dorgan and Nikki Petrie, who's an advocate on the national stage for the issue of missing and exploited Indigenous women. This is a nationwide problem. This isn't just Wisconsin. As you're on this task force, are you looking to other states, other parts of the country that have made efforts that have helped, that have moved things in the right direction?
Yeah, so we're really, you know, even before we began to conduct our very first meeting, we really looked for our northern relatives, which was Canadian, Canada, and worked closely with them to kind of find out what happened when they did their report. The Canadian Inquiry is the biggest report that's been conducted in Indigenous communities. And so we really looked for them to see what were some of the things that they found. Are there things that we could learn from their process? And then we worked with New Mexico and Minnesota recently put out their reports. We worked very closely with them to figure out what they're discovering, and then what are some of the things that we can do here in Wisconsin to collaborate on a nationwide effort.
And I'm thinking we've been talking mostly about what happens after a woman is reported missing. Are there things that we can do to make Indigenous women less vulnerable to kidnapping, exploitation, the other things that might prevent these things happening in the first place?
There's so many things that need to be done. You know, I look at, I work in the field of sexual assault with the Wisconsin Coalition, and I was looking at just general information about beds, like shelter beds, so a women's shelter for domestic violence. There's only 60 Indigenous shelters throughout the entire country. And so we really, I know that Bad River or Red Cliff don't have a women's shelter right on the reservation. And so there's not even a safe place for women to go if they're in a domestic violence, which ultimately leads to homicide. And so there's such a lack of resources that you're really starting to see what results, and the end result is death in our community.
Is this something that the state task force is looking at, not just the response after something bad has happened, but the prevention angle?
Yeah, so absolutely. Wisconsin is going to be really unique in the fact that our end result of this task force will be a report in the state of Wisconsin. But we also are going a step further in trying to create an implementation plan, because this can't be solved in the few years that the task force is convened. This needs to be we have a long way to go. We know that, and we need to put in a plan into place for the future.
I know sometimes reports get filed and not a lot of action is taken. Who needs to take the lead, do you think, to make sure that the recommendations that come out of this, they're actually pursued and not just, for a year or two, but actually get put into the DNA of how police departments operate, local governments and tribal governments operate?
You know, honestly, because legislation for this bill of creating the task force kind of fell flat, so we really do need the public and the people to rally, like I said, on this cause in the future. We're not going to see the type of movement that we need. We need the state to take the lead. We need departments, and that's what we're building right now is relationships. Our task force is a 40-member voting task force, and it has multiple players from different departments and all 12 Indigenous tribes represented. We can't stop that momentum after this report is done. We have both, it's bipartisan, so we have both parties at the table. And we are now creating subcommittees that have 20-plus agencies, system partners that are sitting at the table. And so folks are really coming to the table on the task force. And so we have to keep up that momentum past the task force and into the future. And that's where the real change is going to happen.
What would you say to members of the public to encourage them to pay attention to this, to take it seriously as an issue, and maybe seek out these stories, even if they're not plastered across the headlines and cable news coverage.
Yeah, we need to, I think that's really important. What we're starting to see is public awareness is really key to for folks not to be able to put their blinds on when it comes to this issue. We need folks to be to understand that this is happening, and it's happening here in Wisconsin. And we all should be afraid that this type of violence is happening in our communities. And there should be a non-acceptance for anyone to be disposed and not paid attention to when this type of crisis is happening. So I do hope that folks really do look into this issue and put resources behind it and rally. And I hope to see partnerships built through this that really, really attack all of the areas that we need to really make a change for the future of our people.
In just our last less than a minute now, look 10 years ahead. Where do you hope we are in Wisconsin?
I hope in Wisconsin we have funding resources that support this cause. I hope that we have folks that are on the table creating legislative changes that will help address this. I hope that we see a decrease in the amount of folks that we have that are murdered and missing in our communities. And I hope that we have partnerships in place that if it does happen, that we have folks that can help us, including media. Media is very important in this cause.
Justine, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
That's Justine Rufus, co-chair of the Wisconsin Department of Justice Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force. She's with us today to talk about the work that task force is doing and shining a light on the issue in Wisconsin.